begin our second time together. Very interesting poem. Perhaps some of you have heard this before. It's titled, Oh, How We Praise You, God. Oh, how we praise you, God, for the marvel of our differences. I am a woman. First and foremost, a woman. I have a woman's understanding, a woman's discernment and empathy, a woman's emotional response. My husband is a man. First and foremost, a man. He has a man's personality, a man's logic and perception, a man's ambition. Equal in value and dignity? Assuredly. Nevertheless, we function differently. We express differently. We react differently. Male and female created he them. This fact we cannot change, nor do we want to. Oh, how we praise you, God, for the marvel of our differences and of the wisdom of your plan. Ruth Harms Culkin. Very interesting. I think that captures very well the topic to which I've been addressing myself, male-female differences. Last week we discussed one of the 12 that I hope we can get through, and we only got two-thirds of that one done. But nonetheless, you can see how wide the range is. This is a topic that I think is of great value to many of you. The response has been very positive. None of these things that we discuss are absolutes, but I always feel if the shoe fits, we should wear it, so to speak. And I think that many of these things are true in your experience, and I hope that they will be of relevancy to you. I know that I got one note from one person who said, you know, do not feel as though the collegians need to put it on the back burner. Many of them right now are in relationships where this is very, very valuable to them, that they can be applying this in their life at this present juncture. So I hope in that regard that you don't have to put it on the back burner, but begin to really deal with it presently in your relationships, both with men and with women. But some of the topics that we are discussing would be the following. For those of you who are with us for the first time, we will be looking, and we did last week, at two different angles on how men and women express themselves. And I've discovered that they do express themselves differently, generally speaking. They handle their feelings differently. They tend to make decisions differently. They deal with another person's problems differently. They attempt to change the other person differently. They fight differently. They view the home differently. They relate to the marriage differently. They expect the other to perform differently. They experience love and sex differently. They respond to sin and guilt differently. And they understand themselves differently. And as I indicated last week, then we wonder why we have so many problems. And it is true that these differences exist, and as I indicated, I'm convinced that oftentimes when there is conflict in a marriage relationship, it's because there is a misunderstanding or a miscommunication. And that misunderstanding and miscommunication, I believe, on a great many cases, is the result of not understanding male-female differences. That you are different from me, and therefore you react and you respond differently, and I don't understand that always. And I get frustrated, I get angry, or I get hurt. Whatever the response is, somehow there is a tension, there is a conflict. And it becomes sometimes very painful. And then eventually, if that's not cared for, if that's not taken care of, mistrust or distrust, disrespect sets in, and then they end up often at Grace in one of the offices saying, hey, you know, we're really having problems here, we're really hurting, and we don't know how to get this thing resolved. And sometimes it's too late, because the emotions are so deep and the mistrust has run so rampant. But we based a lot of our comments primarily on 1 Peter 3:7, which has really penetrated me because I'm a husband. It says, husbands, be understanding of your wife as the weaker vessel. Now, in order to do that, we need to understand how. We need to understand what. And at that point, Peter does not elaborate. He simply tells us that she is weaker, and I think basically emotionally, because she's more vulnerable. She has that maternal, sensitive instinct. So she's not always able to respond to certain things that come to her. It's too painful. She's too vulnerable. And so we're to be understanding of that. And at that point, then, it's important that each man in his relationship with his wife begin to discern what it is about her that he must understand. Or in a relationship with a man or a relationship with a woman, I think the principle holds true. We've got to attempt to discern. And that becomes subjective, yes. It's experiential, yes. And there are certain principles in Scripture which are certainly definite. Husbands are to love their wives. wives are to respect their husbands and submit to their husbands. There are certain other angles at which we come at it, but I'm basing some of my thoughts on 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, 2nd verse, and particularly to those of us who are men, that it is important for us to evaluate. And so that was some of the things that I had done. And I began to try to look at some of the differences that exist, listening to people, watching couples. None of these things are true in every case. But oftentimes, if there is a reversal, you can just apply it still, although you're applying it this in instances to the other person, other than maybe to yourself, you apply it to them. Last week, we looked at how men and women express themselves. We listened to the fact that men are idea-oriented primarily, whereas women tend to be people-oriented, and we illustrated that. We saw also that men tend to express themselves, they express facts, and they try to discover facts, whereas women have a capacity to express feelings and try to discover feelings, generally speaking, again. Today we want to look at a third angle of this thing of how they express themselves, and it's this. Women have a tendency to particularize. They have a tendency to be detailish. Because a woman experiences life on her feeling level, she has a tendency to receive permanent impressions. It's kind of like what I call a hot branding iron. If something is of an emotional nature, she will receive an impression strongly on her heart, and she won't forget that. And she remembers every little detail. She can recall it very vividly because she's experienced it emotionally. And when those feelings are deep, they are not forgotten. And oftentimes the reason that they recount these episodes so explicitly is that they are able to feel it all over again. They relive it. Men, on the other hand, have a tendency to generalize. It's not so important for him to recapture those details of an experience he's had. Sometimes they don't rekindle the same kind of emotions. He has a tendency to observe facts. For instance, on a trip, you know, the wife is just taking it all in. For instance, it's maybe the first time they've been able to get away for a year, and the kids have babysitters or whatever it is, and she's just taking everything in. And it's just a time for them to be together, the two of them. She knows exactly what he has worn, he has got on, and she'll remember everything about that. Now, 3 years later, he will have a tendency to not remember that. He will, during that trip, she will be all excited, the two of them are together, and he's checking the mileage. Looking at the time now, I figure we can get there, oh, maybe about an hour and a half. And then he's looking for the chips all the way, the highway patrol, you know, and he's getting behind a trucker. He's checking all the different facts and things that are going on, and he sits there and just drives and enjoys the time, yes. Then he's looking for the restaurant, you know, the next episode, and, well, it's cheaper, this one. It's really cheaper here. We can, well, I know that's got more atmosphere, but the truckers where they stop, that's cheaper. You can get a good meal there. But the atmosphere isn't that. Well, atmosphere, that's important, but we need to really, you know, be budget-oriented. You know, I often remember seeing couples who would be together with other couples, right? And they're recounting different episodes that have happened in years past, and the guy says, yeah, it was back in 1972 when we went to the Black Hills, South Dakota. Yes, and it was, I think, June. No, no, honey, it was July, remember? It was July 15th, and we left early in the morning. And remember, you had on your plaid pants and your white shirt. And you were so adorable, you were so sweet. And in fact, we just left, remember, as the world turned was on? And details. When she feels something that's very emotional to her, very important, she can just relive it. Relive it. That's why it's interesting for me. I remember Sarah and I, before we got married, we would correspond, and the summer that we corresponded the most, I was in Israel studying, and she would write letters, and I had letters at every place. All the people on the trip couldn't believe it. She must have written over 70 letters that summer. It was unreal. But what was interesting was that I would write letters to her as well. And her girlfriends told me later on that she would receive the letter, they would be standing there with her, she would read it once, put it back in the envelope, put it in her purse, and quote it verbatim. Because she felt it emotionally. They say that then she would go right over to the library and attempt to read a chapter in history and couldn't remember it. Why? Because she wasn't emotionally involved in history. She was emotionally involved with me, and so she recalled every word. It was very easy for her. She could remember everything, having read it just about once or maybe twice. She experiences things on that emotional level, things which are emotionally important to her, she will recall, and she can remember them months and years later. You know, it's interesting how women are detailish. I know of one girl who is sharing that she has to take her phone off the hook. And the reason she does is she knows that if she starts talking to her friends, that everything takes so long. And I know sometimes women are really burdened because they do converse so long. It is important for them to express everything. And the reason for that is that women want to know all the details. They want to paint that picture. They want to understand what went on. Now, that's sometimes made fun of by men. And it's a humor that's always there, and we do laugh at it. But it's something that God has created. That woman has that capacity to remember things very detailish when she's quite emotional. In fact, my mother, you know, is always of interest to me because she wants to know everything I do. Sarah does too. And they want to know what went on. They want to create a picture. My mom says to me often when I was growing up, I wish I was a little birdie and I could just watch what you're doing. I went to... She said that innocently. I didn't think I was up to anything, but that's true. Maybe I wouldn't have wanted her to watch. But I went to military school from the 8th grade to 12th grade, so that was one of the reasons she wanted to really know what I was doing and wanted to know the details. She wanted to know where I was, what the place I lived was like, so she could envision it in her mind. Now, generally speaking, men don't write their college sons and say, tell me what your room layout looks like, what does it look like, where do you live, what do you do, all these kinds of things, because men have a different viewpoint. But to a woman, that's very, very, very important. And that's why she has a tendency to ask a question, then another question, and then another question. What did you say then? And what did you do here? What did he say? How did you say that? They want to know very much. And sometimes men just kind of react to that, and it's kind of like Archie Bunker, you just stifle yourself. Some men watch Archie Bunker and they don't laugh. They think it's a serious commentary on... They have no idea that this is a comedy. That's what they are, you see, and that's so interesting because that's exactly how they are. But women are concerned with detail. It's very fascinating. We all know the account of in Ruth where Ruth had come back. It's in the third chapter, the 16th verse, and it's very interesting. Naomi had gone to be with Boaz, and she had been with him, and now she returns to Ruth. And it's very fascinating, and it says this, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And Naomi told her all that the man had done for her. And I thought that was very interesting, because there again, that points out how women's relationships one with another is, and also what they want it to be with their husband. They want to know, they want to see, they want to know everything, because it's very important. They want to see that picture, and they will recall it. That's why at weddings it's so interesting. And women can recall their weddings. They can remember what they did from 801 to, you know, they can remember everything. What they wore, what the bridesmaids wore, who said this, how they said that, what she was like when she came down, what music was played, everything, because it was an emotional thing. And that's why oftentimes when women go to weddings, they project themselves right into it again, and they relive their own wedding. And we're going to deal with some of those later on, some interesting things. But there's an agitation that develops from this. We saw the explanation, then we gave it some illustrations, now we see the agitation. Men complain that their wives interrupt them quite often because he sees he's not getting the story right. Generally, that's true. Sometimes men correct their wives, and that happens. But a lot of times, in an area that's quite emotional or people-oriented, the wife will interrupt and feel as though he can't get it right. Or he feels that she takes too long in telling the story. Also, men get reactive to a woman's curiosity. She is very curious. And this is also a problem, and this is where the scripture is very insightful. Women, because they're detailish, and because they particularize and because things are very important to them, will have a tendency to want to know more than perhaps they ought to know. I've talked with ladies insofar as gossip is concerned, and they say, yes, this is a problem among us. And the scripture addresses itself both in 1 Timothy 3:16 and Titus 2, with women who are malicious gossips, and it went overboard. But because the woman has a desire to know, she also tends to get information she ought not to have or want to contribute information. I've had ladies say to me, and in response to the question that I asked, why do you gossip, or why is gossiping sometimes a problem? She said, because it's very important to be the first one to know and to be the first one to tell somebody. And she says, sometimes we resent ourselves for being that way. And it becomes a real problem, and that's why the Scripture exhorts so firmly that we must not gossip. Because you have that capacity to remember things in detail and also have a need to express it, you can sometimes go over at that point and become a grumbler, you can become a complainer, you can become someone who contributes information that should be of a confidential nature. Our wives complain, on the other hand, that their husbands never recount the event. It's so fascinating. I mean, we did the men's retreat here not too long ago, and we had about 180, and I gave the seminar on male-female difference, and would you believe about 70 guys came to this thing? And I shared, just in an hour's time, some of these things, and these guys started hooping and hollering. I mean, they were excited because they realized that they weren't alone. They really discovered that. They were extremely guilt-ridden, and they felt like they were the only ones who were experiencing some of these thoughts and different things, and they began to be relieved and began to be excited. And then I said, now, gentlemen, in light of what we said today, what would normally be the way in which we would respond to our wife when we come home and she's waiting with bated breath as to what went on during the weekend? We come in and she says, how was your weekend? What do we usually say? Good. What's for dinner? Type thing. You see, men have that tendency to generalize. You see? Very much so. And you'll discover that to be the case. You'll come home and your wife will say, how was your time, honey? Oh, it was good. It was good. Oh, we had a good time. And she will be very frustrated because she wants to know more than that, and we'll get frustrated because we don't want to contribute more than that. And that becomes an agitation. So what is the resolution? The wife must be more understanding of her husband's nature in that he does not absorb details in the emotional area sometimes. She must also try to stick to her point when speaking rather than digressing at times. Husbands, on the other hand, must be more understanding of his wife's curious nature, that capacity in her to experience things emotionally and thus recall things in detail. Sometimes she can't help that. And I, as the husband, must try to be more descriptive, on the other hand, also in my own overview of certain situations, because I must recognize how much my wife is consumed with me and how much her thoughts are with me day in and day out, and she really wants to know what my life out there is like. That's important to her. So those are just some little insights as to how men and women are different insofar as their expressions go. Now, how do they deal with their general feelings? Here's a second question. I believe generally that men have a tendency to hide their feelings, whereas women have a tendency to display their feelings. Sometimes they want to hide those, but they're not able always to do that. And what happens often in a marriage relationship that is so sad is that the man does not divulge what he's feeling. One woman said, my husband is a mysterious island, and I'm forever going around him trying to land. Trying to see, who is he? Who is he really? And oftentimes, because the man hides his feelings, the wife does not know what he's really feeling. So she is jolted sometimes to discover things that he was feeling and thinking. I counseled a woman not too long ago who was attending Women's Grace, and they were talking about men and certain problems that men go, and she was saying to herself and others, oh, my husband would never be that way. He never, never feels that way. 2 weeks later, he reveals to her that he's seen another woman. She didn't know. She had no idea because he kept it hidden. Now, that doesn't mean that you go home today, ladies, and begin to ask questions of a nature that really undermine trust. No, I'm not asking you to do that, and don't do that. I'm just pointing out the fact that a man can sometimes hide those feelings, and he doesn't display them. And I'm always reminded of 1 Samuel, Hannah, where she didn't have a child, and she was grieved. And the Scripture just illustrates so vividly how a woman was so saddened in countenance, and how she just couldn't but help display the inner emotion. It was so apparent, and that happens often in the marriage relationship, and we're going to illustrate that in several things down the line that I think will be quite humorous to you, but it's so, so true. The agitation, insofar as men hiding their feelings and women having a tendency to display those, the agitation on the part of man is that, well, my wife has a tendency to talk so much. She tends to be so emotional. She can't discuss anything without concluding that it's an argument. Right? How many times I hear that one? And it seems like she always cries whenever we get into this discussion. In fact, I've noticed that she has a tendency to cry at every love story, every wedding, every birthday, every birth announcement, every note from a friend, and she cries every time someone else cries. Men, on the other hand, the wife feels, never share how they feel. He's cold and insensitive. He never understands how I feel. And when I ask him about his feelings, he clams up. He has a tendency to run. And you know something's very interesting? I have not met anyone who is just simply sensitive. Either they are oversensitive from the man's evaluation, or from the wife's evaluation, he is insensitive. I've never met anybody who is sensitive yet. You see, it's because we evaluate everybody on the basis of our own feelings. Now, granted, I would concede, as I said to someone yesterday, she said, but aren't men more insensitive? And I said, not intentionally so. Yeah, I think basically they are, but not intentionally. We're going to see that men are basically obtuse or imperceptive of a woman's feelings. And we're going to illustrate that. And so you see an agitation oftentimes because the wife wants to really know what her husband is feeling. And that's why I think we husbands have to recognize our wife's need to ventilate her feelings. We need to listen to her and look at her. We must not just pick up on the facts behind the newspaper. You get that one? A wife will come into the living room, and there he is reading the newspaper, and because he's factual-oriented, listening for facts as we talked about before, and she's feeling-oriented, he sits there and she comes in and says, honey, can I talk to you? Sure, go ahead, Hans. And so she now divulges the information to him, right, and he continues to read, and she's getting somewhat upset because he's not looking at her. And then she says, you're not listening to me. Oh, yes, I am. Well, what did I say? And then he repeats back the facts, and he's right. But she's very frustrated because she wasn't aware of his feelings toward her, you see. But he was listening to the facts. I had a man, when I was giving this illustration, say, you know what I did one time, Eddie? And I said, no, what? He said, well, that's a common scene in our household. I sit and read the newspaper, and my wife comes in, and I say, yes, dear. Yes, dear. So he said, I decided this time I would get a little tape recorder, and I would record every 15 seconds, yes, dear. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. And he put the tape recorder in his lap, and he had the newspaper, and she came in, and he pushed that thing on, and every so many seconds, yes, dear. Yes, dear. And she started talking, and suddenly she realized something was strange, and she peeks over the newspaper. He said, I almost got away with it. But they had a good relationship, and they both laughed a great deal over that one. But that was an illustration. That's an illustration. They caught on, you see, to a male-female difference, and they were humorizing it, so to speak. They were playing on that, and they had that relationship where they could do that. But see, he caught on to his own capacity, his own way, and it became quite humorous. But it was certainly a vivid illustration of a deep concern. The husband as well must never use the excuse, I don't share my feelings with my wife so as not to worry her. Now, certain times that may be the case. If you're being criticized and you can handle it, let's say at work, sometimes maybe it's important not to share that with her because she'll have a greater tendency to hold a grudge because she is consumed with you and she gets very offended when someone does not like you or speaks evil against you. And she'll have a more difficult time with it than you. And sometimes you need to be cautious. But to use the excuse, I don't share my feelings with my wife so as not to worry her, may be more of an excuse, and you just need to be sensitive to that, as do I. And I will see that not sharing my feelings has a tendency to worry her even more. The wife, on the other hand, must not be critical nor give advice if or when her husband opens up. Now let me just say something here that's very important. Men, and we're going to see it, are in tune with a lot of their failings, a lot of their guilt, and there's a problem in men called pride. And they have a difficult time sometimes really opening up. Sometimes women do, but generally speaking, if you gave me 100 men, 80 to 85 men would be along this line. They have a difficult time opening up and sharing some of those inmost thoughts. They are very frightened of doing that. And sometimes in that relationship, they will open up. They're feeling extremely guilty. And if at that point the wife gives advice, or she tells him he shouldn't have done that, or he is really not too good of a person, what? You felt this way, or you did this, or what? I will bet my bottom dollar, and I'm not a betting man, but I will bet you that he won't open up again. Not for a long while. It's very important that if your husband does begin to divulge those feelings, that you really listen. And particularly in those initial stages, that you don't pass judgment on that. If he's wanting your advice, I trust that he'll ask you for it. But in those early times together, you need to build that relationship, and you need to allow him the freedom to open up to you. Because if he doesn't, he'll withdraw like a turtle into a shell. And then you'll always be pulling on him to open up. And I've had many wives say to me, they'll shake their head and tears will come to their eyes and says, boy, did I ever do that wrong? The wife is much purer oftentimes in a relationship. She isn't consumed with lust as some guys are who come to Christ but have been in the world, and they're really battling some areas. And they'll open up to their wife about something, and she will get very threatened by that, and she'll condemn him for that or tell him he ought not to do that, or she'll say, you don't love me if you do that, and suddenly he'll just recoil. And he's got a real need. He's got a real need. And so it's very important at that juncture, ladies, if you want your husband to share those feelings, you've got to allow him to share those inmost things at his particular time. And he will, because he feels guilty about it. And he knows you love him, and he wants to share that with you. But you need to understand how humbling that is for him. How humbling that is for him. And to get stepped on causes that male pride to react, and he won't open up again. So the wife must try to be sensitive as to when also to share her troubled feelings. Particularly when she comes home, it would be good to allow him to come in and have those few minutes. Particularly if you have younger children, and you'll notice this as you get married, collegiates, as you have that mate that you determine to live with, the guy will come home and you girls will begin to have young children, and you'll find out that young children are busy bodies. They will keep you hustling all day long. And you'll discover that you won't want to continue to have this conversation with a three-year-old. I mean, the level of intellectual conversation is minimal, you know. And you'll have this great desire to just talk. Just talk. And little Johnny will have done this, and little Sammy will have done this, and Mary will have done this, and all these burdens and all these problems. And because you're a woman, you have a need to express all the emotions that you're feeling. The minute he hits the door, you'll just, oh, boom. You dump it all on him. And understandably so. Understandably so. But if you can wait 15 minutes, a half hour, maybe an hour, get him a cup of coffee, whatever, and let him come, rest, and then begin to share that, that will make a little bit more of a peaceful situation. He should, when he comes in that door, be willing to listen to you and sit down and just really let you share with him. But I've just found out that when it comes down to who's going to demand of who to do that, the man is more stubborn. He just really is. He just is not going to do that sometimes. And as much as I like to say this is how it ought to be and want it to be, and I would say to those gentlemen who are this way, you need to continue to do that, or those of you college guys who can listen to this, when you get married, go ahead and be sensitive and do that. But wives, if you're pulling on your husband, you begin to find out that he's recoiling from that, then back off of that. Even though you have that tremendous emotional need, wait for an opportune time. And I know it's unfair. Wives will say to me, that's unfair. I say, I know, but what can I do? I can hit him over the head with a baseball bat, you know, but I just won't change things. And he'll run from me the next time he sees me if I just lay a guilt trip on him. You have more potential to win him, but you've got to win him through your actions and behavior, and that's what Peter is talking about. And a wife must understand that she shouldn't ask so many questions that corner him to reveal what he feels. They pick up on that quickly. You know, it's interesting in Judges, very, very interesting. The 16th chapter, the 16th verse, we're seeing here Samson and Delilah, and I thought this was so interesting. She wanted this information from Samson. And she's wanting this information so that she can reveal it to her relatives and really kind of betray him. But in verse 15 of chapter 16, it says this. She said to him, how can you say, I love you, when your heart is not with me? You have deceived me these three times. Talk about a deceiver. She was the deceiver, but she projects onto him what she was guilty of. And have not told me where your great strength is. And then this is what it says in verse 16. And it came about when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him, that his soul was annoyed to death. You have that capacity, ladies. You really do. Not because you are intending evil, not because you really want to destroy him, but because you have this strong emotional need. And you have a desire to find out what he's feeling and get things from him. And he's not budging. And so you go at him a little bit more and then get frustrated and all these kinds of things. But do know that the scripture indicates that you can't annoy him to death. And he will divulge that information not because he really wants to, but only to okay, just kind of get things peaceful. But he's going to resent that because he's not giving it freely. And particularly if he's been vulnerable before, he's not so sure what you might do with that information. Another question, how do they arrive at a decision? This is an interesting one. These are generalizations again, but men have a tendency to approach matters inductively and intellectually. They tend to analyze and study things. They have a capacity to break things down. Women, on the other hand, approach matters intuitively and instinctively. They sense and feel. They become one with it. Now, that isn't to suggest that women aren't analytical and that men aren't intuitional. But generally speaking, this is the case. Men go on proof because they need facts. Women go on a promise because they feel trust. Let me read that again. Men go on proof because they need facts. Women go on a promise because they feel trust. This is seen in door-to-door salesmen, legal matters. Door-to-door salesmen know that if they can win the woman, if they can establish a trustworthy relationship within those first few minutes, they will perhaps sell her because she trusts. She really does. We're becoming more and more skeptical in our culture toward that kind of thing, but by and large, she trusts. That's why there's, I think, a three-day renege thing. You can postpone that commitment 3 days later because they recognize the persuasive ability of some men in relationship to women because they can establish trust immediately and play on that trust. Now, I always say, gentlemen, don't put down your wife's capacity to trust, because if she knew all the facts, she wouldn't marry you. That's poor, isn't that sad? But I think that brings home the point. Sometimes men have a tendency to really put their wife down because she does trust. You know, that's why men are always poking fun at women. They can get her to believe things. They can make statements. And really? And then the guys just kind of play on that, you see? You can fool them because they trust your words. And we think, how foolish can she be? No. She trusts. She's been created with that capacity to believe. Maybe I shouldn't share this here. We came back from Vision Valley. And this morning we were up there for the retreat, and we were coming down the grapevine, and there's a place where there's a lake, a little bitty lake, and there's a fence around it. There's a fence around it. And I turned to Sarah and I said, that's where they grow alligators. And she looked over there like, but see, she trusts me. And I said to myself, here again, that's just that capacity for her trust. She believes me. She is consumed with me. She loves me. And it's so easy for me to take advantage of that. And you gentlemen need to recognize that too. Now, we laugh at it, and it is funny. But that's a capacity that she has that's very genuine, and that just illustrates again that she's more vulnerable. Men can deceive their wives much more easily. Much more easily. Men are tremendous deceivers. Now, there are women, but they are rare, who are deceiving types. But those are rare. By and large, the man is the deceiver, the man is the liar. And that's true. That's true. If you look around at it, you know, that's why there aren't so many women politicians. But here's an illustration of how they arrive at a decision. I think we gave this to you the other day, but the husband says, I think we should do it this way. And the wife says, well, honey, I feel we should do it this way. And then he says, well, why do you feel that way? And then she says, I don't know. He says, well, you've got to have some reason for the way you feel. Well, I don't really know. He said, well, you can't just... I was talking to a guy this the other day, and he was saying to me, Eddie, you see, that point you gave was really tremendous. He said, I'm dating this girl. And he said, we've been talking about this, and I'm very logical. And I say to her, what does she think? And she says, well, I feel this way. And I say, well, why? And she said, I don't know. And he said, now, wait a minute. You've got to think logically. Now, let's get this relationship right. And it's a matter of not you being dogmatic in relationship to your husband about feelings, saying, well, Eddie said that my feelings are legitimate, and then using that against him. No, you've got to recognize that you can be misled. But, gentlemen, you need to take into consideration her feelings, and you'll become the wiser for it. The agitation, however, is this. Husband is frustrated because his wife doesn't give reasons for listening to reason. Some men tend to view their wives as naive and unintelligent. And I see this often in public settings, and it really grieves me when I see men poke fun at their wives in public over the way in which they are. If there's anything that really saddens me is to watch a woman be totally humiliated in front of others because her husband is treating her like he treats a man, saying some off-color remark, saying something that's very inconsiderate, unkind. You know, that's why Archie Bunker, I said again, is such a vivid illustration of how he devastates Edith. But she loves him, and she just hangs in there with him. But he humiliates her all the time. In fact, if that was a true situation, Edith would have bailed out a long time ago because of the way in which he treats her. And women can take a lot. They really can, but they can't be pushed too far, and particularly as they're continually socially embarrassed, because their self-image hangs on the husband's image of them. And for them to feel as though you have an image of them that's very negative, it just begins to undermine their whole person. And I've had women come into me who say, Eddie, I feel like a nobody. I feel like a nobody.
I don't have any self-esteem. I just feel worthless. My husband has said so many things to me, and I kept fighting against it, thinking that it wasn't true or whatever. But after a while, you begin to believe it. He's got to be right. He's very successful in what he does. I guess he's right, and I've gotten a little overweight, and I know that I'm not as lovely as some of those women at the office, and I guess maybe I am a failure. I finished high school, and I've helped put him through college, and I'm not really that intelligent. I can't really carry on a conversation anymore with him. He seems to be much more intelligent than me, and sometimes I'll contribute information, and he'll say, that's ridiculous. And suddenly, over time, they begin to feel like they are nothing. And that's what James Dobson was so profoundly expressing, that the number one problem confronting women is feelings of inferiority. What every wife wishes their husband knew, what is it? The tremendous feelings of inferiority. Now, men don't perceive that, and you'll see this, guys, as you date. Girls socially seem much more capable because they're more verbal. They get together, they start talking and everything. And guys in those first years feel inadequate, but they get together in these social settings and girls are talking, and guys feel much more inferior. But you'll find out that you really aren't. Down deep inside, those girls feel tremendously inadequate. They are much more in need of encouragement and attention and focusing in on them. And for them not to get that begins to wear on them, and they begin to feel like a nobody. So be aware of that tremendous need in a wife. And I would just say, here's an absolute. Do not criticize your wife in a public setting. In fact, be very creative if you criticize her at all, even in private. Tactfulness is such a difficult thing in a marriage relationship. But just know her tremendous vulnerability. Why? Because the word you speak about her, she interprets so sincerely. And if she thinks you don't like her or love her, her whole self-image hangs on that, and she becomes very, very saddened. Know the tremendous power you have in relationship to your wife. And she has it toward you, too. I've seen guys who've been really devastated. But generally speaking, in terms of verbal words, a husband can really devastate his wife. Wives can't stand that their husbands always are so logical and right. And oftentimes I see wives become angry with their husband's insensitivity and distrust to them. And that becomes a very sad thing. Well, what is the resolution? Husbands, I must be careful in this area. It is far easier for me to hurt my wife when it comes to making decisions than for her really to hurt me. I can cause self-doubt if I question her feelings and call her stupid. I should recognize how God has made her and that her intuitions tend to be correct and they add to my decision-making. I will take her instincts more into account. Wives, I will not see my husband's logic and analysis as insensitive, but as that which protects me and helps me not be fooled by my feelings. I will not be an I told you so when my husband's good logic proves false to my intuition. 1 Timothy is very interesting in this. 1 Timothy, the 2nd chapter, the 14th verse, it talks about the vulnerability, basically, of a woman, and in terms of her being misled because of her feelings. And it says this, "And it was not Adam who was deceived, but the woman, being quite deceived, fell into transgression." Now, we often wonder why the Scripture states that. It's because of that trust capacity, that emotional capacity, where you go on trust, and so you're much more vulnerable to being deceived. That's why I think Paul writes what he does. Not because he's putting down woman. He's simply saying God has created you with a certain positive capacity which can be taken advantage of by evil, sinful people. That Satan can deceive you, and people can deceive you. You see the same thing in 2 Timothy 3:6, where it talks about, "For among them," meaning these false teachers, "are those who enter into households and captivate weak women, weighed down with sins, led on by various impulses." You see that emotional capacity. You oftentimes see women who are in that area, and they're very misled. Not because they are less than in terms of importance, but because of that emotional capacity. They don't have the discernment sometimes because they don't always have the objectivity. Not putting them down at all. They have so many other capacities as positive, but in that area they need that man's objectivity. Let me ask another question. How do they deal with another person's problems? I think generally speaking, men look for solutions. They tend to be objective, as we've indicated. Women look to understand and to sympathize. Women understand people with problems. Men solve problems for people. I'm always reminded of Hannah and her husband. She was very saddened, and he said, "Am I not better for you than 7 sons?" See, he's very solution-oriented. He was trying to comfort her by giving her solutions.
It's interesting to look at women, particularly in relationship to Jesus. Remember the woman who came to Jesus and anointed his feet and head with oil? And the disciples said, "Don't you realize we could have used that money for the poor?" See, very solution-oriented, whereas Jesus was recognizing this woman was more concerned with understanding him and sympathizing with him. Solutions could come later on. Often you see the wife say, "Honey, I need to talk with you. Betty down the street all but said that I was fat and I was crushed," right? And he says, being solution-oriented, "Ah, don't worry about it. Besides, she doesn't have any room to talk." Right? "And if you're really concerned about it, why don't you lose it?" See? Very solution-oriented. And she goes to the refrigerator and eats a piece of chocolate cake. Men tend to be solution-oriented. I remember Sarah and I, when we were first dating, she was in college, and she came to me, and this was one of the first insights I had into male-female differences, and she was really concerned and burdened about this particular thing, and so I sat and I listened. I really listened, and I was thinking in terms of a solution. And she came to me really heavy and hard, and I listened to her and took everything in, and she talked about a half hour, and I really was attentive. And then at the end, I was sitting there thinking of what could be the solution. And I saw out of the corner of my eye, she got up and she started talking to other people and was all fun-loving and having a great time and just all excited and everything. And I said, "Sarah, did I say something that gave you a solution? Did I contribute something? Because you're..." She said, "Oh, no, no." I said, "Well, why are you happy right now?" She said, "Well, because you understood. And that's all I really needed, was for someone to understand." And I thought to myself, there's no solution. Very, very interesting difference. Now, I could sit down with some of my men friends, and they could come to me, and I could listen to them all day, but if we don't come with some solution, they aren't going to go away like Snoopy and his doghouse, ears up and having a gale time. They still got the problem. And that's why sometimes a wife will sit down with her husband on the other side, and he's got a real burden, a real problem, and she really feels with him, really comforts him as she would another woman, and he doesn't respond. Why? Because he's solution-oriented. He needs that sympathy. He needs that concern. But he is solution-oriented. And he wants you there with him. But recognize, even though the sympathy and understanding are important, he is trying to deal with a problem and will be working on it until he can resolve it. The agitation oftentimes is this. Women get very upset with men because they do not feel with them. They do not feel with the situation. Men, on the other hand, get upset with women because they get too involved and too upset. They should stay away from it, their solution is. But the resolution is, I need my wife's sensitivity. And the wife should say, I need my husband's objectivity. In terms of dealing with another person's problems or in a situation where there is a real heartache, recognize that. We've also recognized it, I think, as young people when we came to a mother or father. If we wanted sympathy, we went to mom. If we wanted objectivity, we went to dad. And as I indicated last week, he would tell you what you needed to hear even if you didn't want to hear it. Right? This is what you should do, type thing. Then the last question we want to look at today is a very interesting one. How they attempt to change the other person. Men try to change their wives through competitive statements or challenges. He will be matter of fact and often harsh and impatient. He will have a tendency to treat her like he would a man. He expects her to respond to his challenges like a man would. He will use silence as a leverage, and because a man responds to sight, he will in most instances try to change his wife's appearance. Women, on the other hand, try to change their husbands by nagging, belittling, comparing, the poor me syndrome. There is the tendency to leave books around. It's just saying, get the message, dear. She will be emotional and deeply concerned about his changing for the better. Let me share something about her motive. She doesn't often want to change him because she's upset with him. She really loves him and mothers him and wants him to change for his sake. She has a tendency to be much purer there. She will treat him like her son. She does intend to help him. Sometimes a woman will use sex as a leverage. Because a woman responds to words and touch, she will most often try to change her husband's approach to her. Now let me break those down. Men try to change a wife through challenging. The husband says, "Sally, why don't you lose that weight? After all, Harry and I lost it. See, we went out and we jogged. Why don't you start jogging?" Attempts to change her through competitive challenges. Now, guys, on the other hand, are saying, you know, John Smith plays racquetball. I could say, I bet I can beat you. He says, you're on, man. And he'll skunk me. You see oftentimes in groups, social settings, where the wife says to the husband, don't kid John so much. Don't kid Bob so much. You're hurting him. And sometimes that's true. But
You need to recognize that men have a way in which they relate with one another that's kind of based on this bartering kind of, hey, you know, and we grow close, as strange as it may seem, we grow close through those kinds of things. Is that true, men? At least that's been true in my experience. Now, what does the husband most generally try to change about his wife? I mean, the number one thing is that her appearance. Now, that's not fair, but that's oftentimes the bottom line problem. Why? Because he responds to sight. As James Dobson indicated, men are visually oriented. This is true in terms of sexual relationships. Men have a real problem in the area of nudity, particularly in our culture. Nudity is a real problem, and they are bombarded with this because they respond to sight. And so the Scripture admonishes that they are to flee those youthful lusts, they are to avoid temptation, they are to know where that is and not go around there. They respond to visual things. And our culture is bombarded, and I see the number one problem often with men is lust. And they're having a real time of it. And it's a secret sin. I've got men who come and are very, very frightened because they have this battle with him all the time. I can usually pretty much predict when particularly a single guy comes in and says, I have a personal problem. I know exactly what it is. I know exactly what it is. It is a real problem with young men and older men as well. In fact, older men have a real problem because they know what's there. And so they have a problem with visual things in their mind and fantasies, and it becomes a real, real guilt trip. And rightly so, it's legitimate guilt, but it's a struggle that they have. It's a real problem. And ladies need to be aware of that. Now, you remember what James Dobson said I'm experiencing right now. There's total silence in this auditorium. You know, and those of you who saw the film. And that's always an interesting point because you know that everybody's listening to what you're saying because this is such an important area. Such an important area. Men respond to sight. And that's why oftentimes men react to women who are overweight in their marriage. And the wife, she gets really sad because she can't understand why. Because she loves him regardless of what he looks like. And that's true because God has created a capacity in you to be much, I believe, much purer in your love, much more innocent. And men fight with the fact that they've got to love unconditionally. That's not as difficult for a woman. And a man battles with the fact that he responds to sight and he's having to deal with that. And he wants to love her unconditionally. But I would just say to you ladies, you need to understand the battle that your husband's in. And he's wanting to love you unconditionally. But don't project onto him your own feelings. You need to be sensitive to him in that regard. I've had women refuse to lose weight, and the reason they say, well, his love would be conditional then. It's conditioned upon whether I lose weight or not. And I say, I understand that feeling perfectly, but I want you just to understand his struggle as well, that it's important for him. And the Bible says in Proverbs and Song of Solomon that he's to be exhilarated with your love, and it's very descript in certain parts. The Bible doesn't hesitate in that. And I want you to recognize that. And men, I just say to you that you need to be maybe open with some other men who are really your friends, and you're really having a battle in this area, and you're not able to get victory, and this is a secret area in your life. You need to really come to somebody who you can really trust, and you'll find he's got the same problem or has had it. But we need to be more accountable in this culture that we're in right now because it's just inundating us. You can't even watch TV now. It's just all over the place. And you're going to be biologically reacting to that, and then it's going to get into your mind, and you're going to be in the secret world. And you see, what you are is what you are in secret. What you are in appearance is secondary. What I am right now is secondary. What I am by myself is who I am, and God knows that. And so this area of the sexual thought, the responding to appearance, is a devastating thing, and maybe you need to be accountable to some one man that you really love and care about, and he cares about you. Women, on the other hand, and we'll close with this one, try to change their husband through nagging. As I indicated, in the case of Delilah, she annoyed him to death, and he finally divulged that information. Now, I say again, oftentimes women aren't doing that because they hate their husband or don't accept him. They're really trying to get him to be what they want him to be because they know that if he is that, they will respond, and then they can serve him. They're trying to get him to be this loving individual because then they can respond to that, and then they can serve him. They really want to serve. They really want to respond. Oftentimes, wives will try to change their husband through comparing. This is interesting. The wife will say, honey, did you see how Bob pulled the chair out for Betty? Meaning, why didn't you do that for me? And he responds, yeah. And I thought, what is wrong with her? Can't she sit down by herself? Then there's the poor me syndrome. You don't love me. And remember, we read that in Delilah. You don't love me, you only hate me. That's a common, common expression. You don't love me anymore. And it just lays guilt on him. And then it's really devastating when he begins to think, well, maybe I don't. And that's not really true. But he begins to think, well, maybe I don't, because you seem to love me and serve me much more, and I seem to be preoccupied, and he begins to wonder. And oftentimes I think wives cause their husband to ask questions that they shouldn't be asking. Because men really do love their wives, but then they compare themselves to her love and they begin to think, well, maybe I don't. And then doubt sets in. So I would encourage you to be cautious in that one. Then leaving books around. That's another thing. Get the message, dear. Now, why do women do this? As I've said, two reasons. Because they love him. They really do want to help him. And also because she knows if he would change, then she could respond, because women are responders. But the bottom line is this. Women try to change their husband's approach to them because they know what they will do in response. And men try to change their wife's appearance. And oftentimes that's a source of real conflict.